we left off last week on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, the last two lines. So now the Gemara is going to turn its attention to what really is the definition of Kriya Shema. What is the minimum of Kriya Shema in terms of Kavanah, in terms of Kriya? Later on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to speak about a scenario which unfortunately I know all too well, which is a person who is dozing off trying to read Kriya Shema. I don't mean in shul, but particular time it occurs is Friday night. So probably the right thing to do, I've seen people do this, but I'm not usually, I wasn't habituated to doing this, is that we read Kriya Shema in shul too early. So when you go home, you eat your meal, and at some point many shuls announce, please remember to repeat Kriya Shema after such and such a time, right? Whenever we'd say Zecher Chavim would be. So probably the smart thing to do as soon as you go home, because for many of us, by the time Kabbalah Shabbos is over and the announcements and you schmooze and you walk home, it's probably already at least 30 minutes after Shkia. Probably is the right time to say Gimel Parshas. But I usually rely upon the fact that I'm going to say Kriya Shema Lamita. And when I say Kriya Shema Lamita Friday night, when I daven the Maariv early, I'm going to say three Parshas. But you can imagine, usually by the time of getting to the second Parsha, lying in bed, repeating Kriya Shema, it's like I can't say how many times. I have to start over at some point because I've kind of half dozed off. So I'm very, very sympathetic to the discussion in the Gemara later, Kara Misnamne. Misnamne means you're not quite awake, you're not quite asleep. So there are all these kinds of scenarios. The Mishnah later in the parak will also talk about if you're a worker, you're an uman, and not sure that this would apply in too many cases today, but an uman, let's say who started work at daybreak and they haven't read, you know, before daybreak, they haven't read Kriya Shema, and for him to read Kriya Shema could potentially mean interrupting his work. The same issue comes up with tefillah, and in general, the fact that you have to say Kriya Shema and daven doesn't automatically mean that you get to cheat your employer in terms of the time that's expected of them. So what it means in I'd say in contemporary context is that if you unless you have your employer's permission, or unless you don't really work on the clock, unless you work crazy hours, or if you work for yourself, so it means that it probably is inappropriate to go for a mincha minyan unless it's during your break time anyway, because you'll be stealing from the employer's time. So you daven b'yichidus because it's faster, because you have to daven, presumably you have to make up that time anyway, but certainly you should minimize the amount of time, any kind of incursion into your actual work time. So these are all sorts of considerations that relate to how much of Kriya Shema is mandatory, how much kavanah do you require for what parts of Kriya Shema. So the Gemara begins, Tana Rabbanan, again, two lines from the bottom on your Gimel Amud Aleph, v'hayu shelo yikra l'mafreya. So we saw that already. This is a braisa that was quoted in the previous section. So you have to read Kriya Shema in order. And one thing that I mentioned in the name of the Rashba, and then I noticed reading the Rambam that he says this, and then it turns out the Rashba acknowledged, I missed the fact that the Rashba said the Rambam says like me also, but the Rashba suggested on the Mishnah, the fact that if someone is korei lahagia, you're reading Sefer Torah to correct it, but you can miyotze Kriya Shema at the same time. So the Rashba said he thinks that if you read the Parshios out of order, it's good. And when the Gemara says here, when the Braisa says, v'hayu shelo yikla mafreya, it means you can't read the Pesukim with the one Parsha out of order. And the Rambam actually says that, the Rambam uses a funny lashon. I can't remember what it is. He doesn't say Yeroi Eli. When the Rambam says Yeroi Eli, it means he has no source for it. He's saying it of his own logic. But he has a kind of a funny language, the Rambam, where it's not clear whether he thinks it's his own idea. But it's implied. It's implied by the Mishnah, by the Gemara's interpretation of Kari Lagia. So this braisa, when it says you can't read the Mafreya, means you can't read the Pesukim within one parasha out of order, not that you can't read the parashios out of order. Again, normally it's clear you're supposed to read the parashios in order. The Mishnah, which we read, it's an hour Mishnah, it's printed here on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, even though it belongs later in the parak. Our Mishnah gives us the reason why we read Shema, before Vahayim Shema, and why Vahayim Shema before the parasha of Vayomer and Tzitzis. But nonetheless, b'di'evet, if you read the parashios out of order, you would fulfill your obligation. Next, Alev Avecha. So it says, I'm sorry, is there a question?
Say that out of order means not parshios and not sentences, but rather the words themselves. You start reading the words one by one backwards.
That's kind of like a Vilna Gaon thing. Not that he would read his Kriya Shema, but the Vilna Gaon probably knew the Torah backwards. I think that the assumption is that reading the words backwards is ridiculous. You don't even get the meaning. When you read, at least when you read the Pesukim, most of the Pesukim that you read, so they, you know, each Pesuk sort of, not all, but most Pesukim express Ksanim of independent thought. So maybe you would think if you read it out of order, but I don't think anybody even considered the possibility that if you read the words out of order, you just jumble them around, that that would actually constitute any kind of kriya.
That's what Rashi says.
What's that?
Rashi says that. Kagon, Bisharecha, Besecha, Mezuzos.
Do you think Rashi? I didn't think about that. Maybe you think Rashi believes that if you read the Pesukim out of order, you would be Yotze.
Well, not the Yotze. It said no. It says no. Oh, the Pesukim backwards, perhaps. I'm not saying anything when he said you're not Yotze. You're not Yotze if you read the words backwards. And you might have thought that the word, as you said, that each word has kedusha. Each word has a kind of meaning in its own right. And you might have somehow thought that there's some value in even saying any these words, even out of order, because the words themselves trigger good, interesting feelings or whatever.
I didn't notice that in Rashi, but I don't know if this is what you're suggesting, Sam. It's possible Rashi holds that if you read the Pesukim out of order, you yotze. It's certainly not what the other Rishonim hold. The Rashba and the Rama are very clear that it's limited to the Parshios. You're right. It's a very interesting Havamina that Rashi has. You would think that maybe you could read the words out of order. But we don't know what Rashi holds about the Pesukim now. But the other Rishonim hold that Pesukim out of order is also no good. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Hadvarim al levavecha, yochol tei kol ha-parsha tzricha kavana, tamad lomar ha-eile. So the Torah says, Vayu hadvarim ha-eile, asher nochi mitzav hayom, Al-Levavecha implies you have to take them to heart. It's not just you're reading them, but you understand, you're paying attention, you're thinking about what you're reading. So the Gemara says, Ad kan tzricha kavana, mikan ve'elach ein tzricha kavana, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. There is a machlokes here, Rashi and Tosfos, what Rabbi Eliezer means. What is Ad kan? Rashi writes Ad kan ad al-Levavecha. In other words, according to Rashi, you have to read three psukim with kavana. And the truth is, Rashi actually, the Yerushalmi, in citing this opinion, I don't remember if it's Rabbi Eliezer's name, the Yerushalmi says, Gimel Pesukim. Tosfos here says something else, which I think is very, very important. And while it's not in accordance with the Yerushalmi's reading, I think it's actually Pshat. Tosfos writes, Ad kan mitzvah strichas kavana, ad b'chol me'odecha, the bottom Tosfos, sheshnei psukim einu medabrim b'yichur Hashem ba'avasa uv'yirasa. So Tosa says something very interesting, and it was something that actually hit me when I noticed the Rambam, a comment in Hilchos Tefillin Mezuzah. I'm going to actually share that Rambam. It's a favorite Rambam of mine. Now, some of you might understand why. Let me just pull up the Rambam in Hilchos. So the Rambam writes here, speaking about a mezuzah, the fourth halacha, he says, "Minog pashut shekosun al mezuzah mibachutz kineged haregash rebach shebein parsha leparsha shakai ve'ein bezehefsi lefi shehu mibachutz." So they write the name shakai between the two parshas on the backside of the mezuzah. It's a little bit, it might have a little bit of you could call it a superstitious element. The Rambam says it's not a big deal. It's not inside the mezuzah. It's on the backside. So it's not a problem. We write actually in our mezuzah, I'm trying to remember what it is. We write kuzu something kuzu, which is the shame, which is, I think, Hashem Elokim Hashem, but the letters are off by one. Like kuzu is the kaf, one before that is a yud, the vav, one before that is a hey, the zayin, the one before that is a vav, and so on. But the Rama mentions they write shakai, but it's on the back side of the mezuzah, so it's not a big deal. Aval elu, shekosumi b'fnim shmos hamalachim. People write inside the mezuzahs the names of angels or shmos kedoshim of, I don't think kedoshim are saints here, but I don't know what the, martyrs. O pasuk, o chosamos, or chosamos are probably incantations. Harehim bechlam mi she'en lahem chelek olam haba. They have no portion in the world to come. She'elu hatipshim, lodai lahem shebitlu hamitzvah. Not only did they ruin the mitzvah, they passed the mezuzah. Ela she'asu mitzvah gedola shehi yichur Hashem shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'avaso va'avodaso. They took this great mitzvah, which is about the yichur Hashem, however you want to translate that, of God, I guess the unity of God and his law, the love of God, and worshiping God, ki iluhu kemeya shel hanayas atzman, as if it were an amulet for their own benefit, kemo sha'ala alipam hasachal, as occurred to their foolish hearts, shazehu davar hamahane behavlei ha'olam. This is something that somehow they think works in the world, and it's nonsense. So the Rambam says, not only did they destroy a mitzvah, but they also they took a mitzvah which was yichud Hashem shel kadosh baruch hu b'avaso b'avadaso, and turned it into an amulet. So when I first read this Rambam, I was struck, what is the Rambam talking about? Mezuzah is an important mitzvah, but mezuzah is about recognizing the presence of God. Every time you walk in and out of your house, you see the mezuzah because you're reminded of the presence of God. But what did he mean by Yichud Hashem shel kadosh baruch hu b'avaso b'avadaso? So at the time, every day I realized, but then I noticed this Tosa says the same thing. He speaks about Dvarim ha-meyichud ha-medabrim b'yichud Hashem b'avaso uviyirasa. The first two psukim of Kriya Shema are in essence, are the essence of Judaism. They are the essence of Judaism. The first one is the monotheistic belief and the idea that we are mishubad to God, that we accept the Kabbalas Amalcha Shamayim, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And the second pasuk is Vahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol nedecha, means that we serve God under all circumstances. Chazal tell us b'chol levavcha means b'yetzer hara b'yetzer atov. It's one of the last Mishnayos in the Masechta. And b'chol nafshecha means that we have to give up our life to serve God. It's a very strange concept in contemporary society. It's very far from our hearts, but if you imagine telling somebody, yes, if someone were going to force me to violate Avodah Zarah, I have to allow myself to be killed rather than worship Avodah Zarah. I think that's something, that kind of idea, and maybe the same thing with certain kinds of Gilead Rayos, people in this society would find very strange. I mean, we know your religion is nice, but the idea that you literally would allow yourself to be slaughtered rather than violate a particular precept of your religion, I think it's very far into the modern mindset. I think it's very standard to the Jewish mindset once you go back to the very modern era. Certainly when you go back to the medieval era, especially, but not only in Ashkenaz, the idea that we believe that there's something more important than life even. And that I think is that's what Avas Hashem is. It's a recognition there's some things that our love for God is so powerful that there are things that basically life doesn't even measure up to. So Tosos says that those two psukim, Shema and V'yohavta, is a coda. It's just saying the words that I just commanded you, these two things, Shema and V'ahavta, which are in Yitosus's words, Yichud Hashem be'ahavaso ubi'yiraso, the Rambam's words, Yichud Hashem avaso v'avodaso. So those two psukim should be alavavecha. When you say them, you really have to pay attention to it. That was Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. So I think the pshat, even though what Rashi says is clearly rooted in the Yerushalmi, the third pasuk doesn't, based upon a logic, the third pasuk doesn't actually tell you anything about central principles of Judaism. It tells you that the first two psukim are supposed to be at the forefront of your mind all of the time. Vayuhad varim eila, which I just told you about, ayom alav avecha. Okay, but that's whether it's two psukim or three psukim, that is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Amar le Rabbi Akiva, harehu omer, asher anochi mitzav v'cha hayom. It doesn't say, asher anochi tzivisich hayom. It's not which I did command you, which would refer to the previous two verses, but which I am commanding you. Bikana talamein, says Rabbi Akiva, shekala parsha kula tzricha kavana. The entire first parsha requires kavana. So Rabbi Eliezer says, it's enough for the first three psukim. Rabbi Akiva says the entire parsha. The question one might ask is, so interestingly enough, who do we paskin like? And the answer is probably neither. We don't paskin like either Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Eliezer. We're going to see later in the Gemara, there's a third opinion, which is the one that we do accept. But the interesting question to ask, and it's not a question I think that Rishonim has seen any of them ask, perhaps more it's a question of Machshava, is what is the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. I mean, now what is the difference? Practically speaking, I understand. There are, I think, three or four more psukim in the parsha, which Rabbi Akiva says you have to have kavana for, and Rabbi Eliezer says you don't have to have kavana for. Or certainly, if you didn't have kavana, it doesn't prevent the fulfillment of Kriya Shema. But philosophically speaking, what's the difference? And I think that the difference between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva's opinion, which is interesting, is that Rabbi Eliezer is focused more on Machshava. Rabbi Eliezer is focused on Kabbalah Samach Shamayim and Avas Hashem, which is fundamentally will lead to certain kinds of actions, but is rooted in the mind, in the heart, in the emotions. Rabbi Akiva says not only that requires kavana, but you also have to think about the rest of the parsha, which is Vishinantam Levonecha, which is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and the mitzvah of Tfilin, and the mitzvah of Mezuzah. In other words, it's not just the Avodah Shebelev, it's not just, you know, our mindset, but what we do actually matters. In other words, it's not enough simply to believe, and in principle, and one's hard to be committed, we are measured by our regular actions. What's kind of interesting, and I may be accused of engaged in drush here, Rabbi Lichtenstein will tell me whether he likes it or not, is that there's a machlokas later in the Masechta. Rabbi Akiva is not really identified. Rabbi Eliezer is identified. Rabbi Eliezer has a very interesting position, which is we daven every day and three tfilos or two or three tfilos. We daven shmona esrei. We daven a fixed matbea of tfila, a fixed form of tfila. Rabbi Eliezer will be quoted, I believe, in the fourth or fifth perek of the Masech, the saying, Kala ose tfilaso keva, ein tfilaso tachanunim. Anyone who makes his tfila keva, fixed, wrote his tfila, is not really tachanunim. It's not accepted. Now, the pshat in Rabbi Eliezer, although this is not the way most of the Rishonim take it, is Rabbi Eliezer was categorically opposed to a fixed format of tfila. Because Rabbi Eliezer was not as Rabbi Eliezer was concerned, rightfully so. We do understand that Rabbi Eliezer was concerned that the habit of reciting tefillah at some point you don't think about what you're saying anymore. The kavana is sort of lost. You go through the motions, you do the deeds, but the kavana shebelev isn't actually there. Now, whatever the position, now if you look in that Mishnah, I believe it's immediately followed by the statement that do you say yudches brachos? I believe it's the Mishnah Chav Chesam and Beis. Rabbi Gamliel says every day you daven Shmon Esrei. Rabbi Yeshua says you can say the Me'ein Shmon Esrei, the Havinenu, the short version. Rabbi Akiva says it depends on how comfortable you are with the Nusach HaTfilah. If you know it well, you should daven all 18 brachos. If not, you should do Havinenu. And then Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Osa Tfilaso Keva and Tfilaso Tachanunim. Rabbi Eliezer seems to be rejecting that position because Rabbi Eliezer was focused, was much more concerned with the Machshava, with what was in the lathe, than in the actual performance. And for Rabbi Eliezer, yes, you can put on tefillin every day. You can put a mezuzah on your house every day. You can be technically in fulfillment of the mitzvah. You can do daf yomi every day or shnai mikra. But nonetheless, you can go through it mitzvah sanashim melumada, through rote, through habit. And that's not the central part. The central part is what's in the first two psukim, is that even when you do perform the actions, it's the machshava shebelev, it's the kabbalah samach shemayim. Rabbi Akiva's of the position, and I think this is significant, and I think as are the Tanaim and the other Mishnah, is that there's an element of avoda that's important even when the kavana is lacking, assuming that it's not the wrong kavana, but when that there's a tremendous value, or I guess it's the line that's attributed to Woody Allen, whether he's the one who said it or not, that 90% of life is showing up. I've heard it in various percentages as well. But the point is that Rabbi Akiva's point may be that it's true that you can perform these mitzvos without the sense necessarily, an active sense or an awareness of Shema Yisrael and Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, but it doesn't matter because the performance of mitzvos is still central. Of course, we aspire that it will be with the sentiment of Shema and Ve'ahavta, even without that, we emphasize the tremendous value. The talk show host, what's his name, Dennis Prager, likes to tell this story. It's not a judgment whether I agree with him or disagree with him. I've never heard the show, but I've seen the quote. Who said that once when he was in Yeshiva High School in Flatbush, so some of you who know who he is, and he's like, boy, he went to Flatbush, not Ramaz, Chas v'Shalom. He went to Flatbush, and apparently he once said to one of his rabbeim, something like, I don't feel like davening a mincha now. And his Rebbe's response is, says, you hear that? Rebbeinu Shalom, Dennis Prager doesn't feel like davening mincha now. And so you could say it was machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, but it happens to be in this specific machlokas, we don't paskin like either. I think our general tendency is to paskin like Rabbi Akiva. We do place tremendous value in showing up. Of course, we aspire for kavanas alev as well. Okay, but it turns out, Wes, when we get to the end, we're not going to paskin like either of them. But this is the machlokes Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer.
So where is the drush in that?
Well, the connection between Rabbi Eliezer, firstly, the interpretation of what's really driving the machlokes, and then the connection to the Mishnah later at the end of the fourth parak.
I don't think that's drush at all. Like the Rav used to say, das is nish drush, das is halacha.
Okay, well, I'm not as confident in my interpretations, but thank you. Okay, so now the Gemara says...
How does it match up to last week's discussion about kavana? What kind of kavana is being is intended here? When it says, adkan tzricha kavana.
So I think in line with what we said, I think it's clear to me that this is not, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't think this is just kavana lates. I think this is kavana as to what you're actually saying. In other words, to take a different way of saying it, if you don't know Hebrew very well, you can be yotzi the rest of Kriya Shema, but and even if you don't know exactly what the words mean, you have to understand what you're doing when you say Shema Yisrael Hashem, Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. That's what I would say.
On Shema Yisrael.
Yes. On right. Well, the problem is Sam has trapped me here. Because he's trapped me in my drush, whether that was his intent or not. Because the question is, what does Rabbi Akiva expect for Kavana the rest of the Parsha? In other words, Rabbi Eliezer's position, one can readily understand based upon what you had quoted from the Rav last week, that this is not Kavana, just Kavana Lotzeis, but this is Kavana as to what you're saying. Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim. The problem is, that makes sense even for the second Pasuk works just as well. For the last Sukkim in the parasha, the question is, what kavana is Rabbi Akiva thinking about? Is Rabbi Akiva really thinking about kavana for the meaning of the words, or is it simply kavana lotzes? And even though Sam is being nice to me and not saying this, he's thinking probably that should just be kavana lotzes. And if Rabbi Eliezer's own saying kavana lotzes, then if Rabbi Akiva's only saying kavana lotzes, then maybe Rabbi Eliezer's also only saying that. In Kol Zeh, I find it difficult to believe that when you have hayu hadvarim ha'ela asher nochi mitzav hayom alav avecha, that doesn't mean kavana salev in the sense of understanding what you're saying. I don't think that can be just for the mitzvah kriya shma. The question then is, does that mean Rabbi Akiva also is thinking the same thing? Maybe, I'm not sure. Unless Rabbi Akiva is saying that you need, he might agree with Rabbi Eliezer, that you need kavana for what you're saying for the first two psukim, but you also need kavana latzeis for the rest of the parsha. And I know that's kind of splitting it a little bit, but it's hard for me to believe that if you want to say that Rabbi Akiva believes that the entire parsha requires kavana, understand what you're saying, I guess that's possible. But the kavana, certainly at the beginning of the Gemara, Sam, I think the simple reading was kavana lotzes. What was that, to know that you're reading Kriya Shema. But Rabbi Eliezer's two psukim, it's inconceivable to me that he doesn't mean kavana as to what you actually mean. So Rabbi Akiva, I'm not sure. Okay, so now the Gemara concludes this first part. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the third line, Halacha Rabbi Akiva. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana, in the name of Yochanan, paskins like Rabbi Akiva, that the entire first parasha requires kavana. Now the Gemara says there is an alternative tradition as to where Rabba Bar Bar Chana quoted Rabbi Yochanan as paskening this way, not on the machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer and choosing Rabbi Akiva, but rather on the following. Ika demasni law, there are those who taught the statement of Rabba Bar Bar Chana named Rabbi Yochanan, ahod de tanya, on the following braisa. Hakore yishma, sarach shiachav enes libo, you have to have kavana. Rav Acha mishirim Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kevan shakivein libo beperek rishon, Shuv Eino Tzarech. The Tanakhama sounds as if you require Kavana for all of Kriya Shema. And Rabbi Acha, B'Shem Rabbi Yehuda, says you only require Kavana for the first chapter, for Tov Uchsavtam Amezuzos Be'Secha V'Sherecha, the first one. So, and after that, you don't need it. And now, Amar Rabba Rachana, Amar Rabbi Yochan, Halacha K'Rabbi Acha, Sh'Amar Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. So there's no machlokas how Rabbi Yochanan paskin, according to Rabbi Rachana. The only question is in what context Rabbi Yochanan issued his ruling, but it amounts to the same thing.
Could you flesh that out for me? There's no machlokas because. Just spell it out, please.
In other words, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabba Barachana, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan Paskin, that the first parsha of Kriya Shema requires kavana, the entire first parsha, not less and not more. Now, there were two traditions as to what context in which he uttered that statement, but the statement is still the same, amounts to the same thing. One version is that he uttered in the context of the Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, where Rabbi Eliezer said only the first two or three psukim, Rabbi Akiva said the entire first parsha. The other versions, he said it in the context of the Tanakhama said the entire Kriya Shema, and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Achim, Shem Yehuda said only the first parsha. But either way, Rabbi Yochanan Tzach comes out of the same thing. The first parsha of Kriya Shema, not less, not more, is what requires Kavana. Tanya Idach, we have another brisa which taught in this context. The Hayu, Shelo Yikra Lamafreya, Al Livavecha, Rabbi Zutra Omer, Adkan Mitzvahs Kavana, Mikan Ve'elach Mitzvahs Kriya. So Rabbi Zutra says that up until the first two psukim, or three psukim, however you want to read Al Livavecha, again, Rashi or Tosfos, requires Kavana. From here and forward, only is a mitzvah of Kriya, of reading it. The Gemara will comment on this in a moment. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, no. Adkan mitzvahs Kriya. Mikan ve'elach mitzvahs Kavana. So up until these three psukim, you have to read. From here forward, it's only a mitzvah of having Kavana. Now, right now, when you read it literally, it sounds like each one holds that you need Kavana for part and Kriya for part. Now, Kavana would suggest, by the way, that you could think the words in your head. There's no mitzvah of actually mouthing the words. And Kriya means you need to mouth the words, you need to read them, but you don't really need to think about, or you need to realize that you're doing a mitzvah, or you don't need to think about what it means, or something like that.
Doesn't this sound like doesn't Rabbi Zutra sound like Rambam?
Except, I mean, maybe. I mean, it depends. It depends which Kavana. Sam, no different than Rabbi Eliezer sounds like the Rambam. Again, the Rambam's going to say first pasuk only, but in principle, that's because of something later in the Gemara. But yeah, in other words, I think Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Zutra both have to be talking about, I'll call it Kavanas Halev as opposed to Kavanah Latzes. I think so. Okay, so now the Gemara says, and this is the question on Rabbi Zutra, Maishna mikan ve'elach mitzvahs kriya. Why is it that Rabbi Zutra says that only from that point onward is that you require kriya d'chsiv l'daber bam? And that's he's talking about the second parsha more. I would say from here till the second parsha. So to here it is says. Ahaksid v'dibarta bam. In other words, in the second parsha, it says l'daber bam. L'matemo samas b'nechem l'daber bam. So l'daber bam is you have to speak, you have to say the words. It says in the first parsha v'dibarta bam. The first parsha requires also dibor. In fact, I want to change. I said something wrong. I knew I said something wrong. Even though he says ad kan mitzvahs kavana, he means the whole first parsha. This is more like Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The second, in other words, it's first parsha versus second parsha. Rabbi Zutra says first parsha is Kavana, second parsha is Kriya. Rabbi Yoshia says first parsha is Kriya, second parsha is Kavana. So in the first parsha, when it says, when in the second parsha, it says, L'daber bam, you have to speak three things, you have to read it. So the first parsha also says, V'dibar ta'bam. So why would Rabbi Zutra say that you don't require Kriya of the first parsha? So now the Gemara corrects Rabbi Zutra. Hachi kamar, this is what he means. Ad kan mitzvahs kavano kriya, mikan ve'elach kriya below kavana. Rabbi Zutra holds that the second part, both parshas have to be read, but you only require kavana for the first parsha. That's really Rabbi Akiva. And now... What's that?
What does it mean to have kavana without kriya?
No, well, right, I don't have to answer that question. I did already, which is to think the words without actually enunciating them. But at this stage, it's not a problem because according to the way the Gemara has fixed Rabbi Yoshia's words, both parashas require Kriya, only the first parasha requires Kavana. So now the Gemara asks, okay, but why is it that the first parasha requires Kavana, but the second doesn't? After all, the Gemara says, Umayshna ad kan mitzvahs kavana ukriya dechsev al levavecha v'dibar tabam. In the first parches, it says vayu adrameila al levavecha and v'dibar tabam. So you need kavana al levavecha and you need v'dibar tabam. But hasam nami hoksev al levavchem l'dabaram. Right. So why don't you require both there? So the Gemara says no. Hahumi boile that al levavchem in the second parsha is needed. Licha de Rabbi Yitzchak. The Omar v'sam temes tevarai eile, and then followed by al levavchem tzricha shetehe sima kineged halev. Where do you put the tefillin? So if you were a Sadducee, theoretically, I don't know what Karaites do actually. Our Karaites probably don't have tefillin. But if you were a Sadducee, you would have put the tefillin al yadecha. You would put it in your hand. That's where you would hold it. However, we don't put the tefillin in our hand. We put the tefillin on our arm. Why do we put the tefillin? Those who are wearing tefillin, when you wear tefillin, why do you wear it on your arm? The answer is because your arm is neged halev. It's right next to your heart. Which is also, by the way, although it's not what the Gemara is referring to, when you put it on what they call the kibores, this part of the arm, you're supposed to have the tefillin lean inward, whether you're righty or lefty, because it's leaning towards the heart. So the Gemara says, al levavchem in the second parsha, is based upon v'samtem es tevarai eile al levavchem al nafshachem ukshartem osam leosayachem. So it's talking about the mitzvah of tefillin, which is it has to be al levavchem, near the heart, not somewhere else on the arm, in the hand, and so on. So that's why he doesn't have the pasuk of al levavchem in the second parsha to mandate kavana, but he does have l'daber bar. In the first parasha, he has you al levavecha, which is not talking about the tefillin; it's at dvarim. That preceded it, and he has v'dibar tabam. So the first parasha has both kriya and a requirement of kavana. The second parasha only has a requirement of kriya. Okay, now the Gemara looks at the second opinion. Amar Mar, Rabbi Yoshe Amar ad kan mitzvahs kriya mikan ve'elach mitzvahs kavana. So he says the first parasha there's a mitzvah of kriya. So far, it looks like you don't have to have kavana. The second parasha only requires kavana. Maishna, the Gemara says mikan ve'elach mitzvahs kavana. Mishum dechsev al levavchem. Obviously, Rabbi Yoshia doesn't use al levavchem the way Rabbi Zitra does. Al levavchem is free to teach you that you need kavana in the second parsha. So if you need al levavchem requires kavana, hachanami in the first parsha hachsev al levavcha. So why do you need kavana? Why don't you need kavana there? So the Gemara corrects again Rabbi Yoshia. Hachikamar ad kan mitzvahs kriya v'kavana mikan ve'elach kavana below kriya. So the first parsha requires kavana with kriya. The second parsha only requires kavana, even if you don't read it, only if you don't articulate it, enunciate it. And now the Gemara asks, "Umayishna ad kan mitzvahs kriya v'kavana b'chsiv al levavecha v'dibar tabam." Why does the first parsha require kavana and kriya, since it has both terms, al levavecha v'dibar tabam? Hasanami hoksiv al levavchem l'daber bam. So why don't you use l'daber bam to say that there's a mitzvah of kriya, of reading, of enunciating the second parsha? So the Gemara answers, "Hahu b'devrei Torah k'siv." That's talking about Talmud Torah. It's not talking about Kriya Shema. V'hachi ka'amar Rachmana agmiru b'naychu Torah ki hechi b'ligrisu b'hu. You should teach your children Torah so that they should habitually recite it. Okay, so that's the conclusion. What emerges from at least this part of the Gemara is that Rabbi Zutra and Rabbi Yoshia agree that the first parsha requires kavana and kriya, and they each agree that the second parsha only requires one of the two, and they argue about which one of the two it requires. Does it require kriya without kavana, or kavana without kriya? Okay. So now the Gemara is going to present what is the opinion that we paskin like.
Rabbi, it just seems a little... Yes. Just a little confusing to me that they're distinguishing here between kavana and kriya when the stam of the Gemara on the Mishnah said that kivin libo, explained the Mishnah when it says kivin libo to mean kivin libo likros. In other words, they're seeming to say that kavana of the lev can be for kriya, and here they're using the words kavana to mean inherently something different than kriya. So it just seems like kind of a stretch.
Whoa. So hold on one second. The expression kavana likros in the Gemara there is the shita that says you don't require kavana. In other words, kavana here is one of two things, and I'm not 100% sure. It's either kavana to be mekai in the mitzvah, or it would make me happier to say kavana for the meaning of the words, more than just doing the mitzvah, but realizing what you're saying.
Right.
But either way, when the Gemara says ma kive libo kive likros, that's a way of saying mitzvahs ein tzrichas kavana, that you don't actually require kavana in terms of doing a mitzvah, kavana of what you're saying. You just can't be what we would call a misasik, right? In other words, you have to have intent to perform an action. You don't have to intend that action should be for fulfilling the mitzvah. You don't have to have intent in terms of thinking about what the action means, but you have to intend to do the action. So again, in the end, so the Gemara there is working within the view that mitzvahs ein srichos kavana, and maybe kriyashma, or at least it's trying to allow for the possibility that the Mishnah doesn't contradict that view. These Tanoim undoubtedly require, they're not talking about, you're correct, they're not talking about Kavana Likros. They're talking about a higher level Kavana, whichever one that is. So they certainly hold that mitzvah kriyashma, sricha Kavana of one variety or another.
That mitzvah kriyashma does not need Kavana, either for the words, the meaning of the words, or l'shem mitzvah?
You mean the opening part of the Gemara?
Yeah.
Well, so this is what it depends upon the following. If you say that all of these Tanaim here are talking about kavana of the answer is yes. There's no way around that. It's impossible to have kavana for what the words mean without also having kavana latzeis. I mean, I think it's kind of inconceivable. It's possible, but if you're being mekabel malchus shamayim, what does it mean that you don't have kavana to fulfill your mitzvah kriyashma? I think that's kind of, I can say the words, but they don't really make any sense. So you're correct. In other words, these Tanaim are all working within the position that mitzvah srichos kavana. Yeah. Now, they might say that it's only true for kriyashma. They might say it's only true for kriyashma, but the Gemara there is allowing for the possibility that maybe not even having kavana at all. But yeah. Yes.
Thanks.
So the Rishonim point out the problem that you're raising in a different way, which is it possible when the Gemara says at the opening line, when it says kivein likros, when the Mishnah said in kivein libo yatza and lav lo yatza, and the Gemara wanted to use that to prove that mitzvah strichos kavana, and the Gemara said, no, it could be kivein libo likros, why didn't the Gemara just say that that was for the first pasuk or for the first parsha? And say, that's what the Mishnah is talking about. But it didn't, right? So it's possible that at the end of the day, still, that's what the assumption would be, that this is somehow, let's say Shema Yisrael, maybe the first Tupsukah, maybe the first Parsha, or maybe all the Kavana being spoken about here. The last opinion won't work. The opinion that says you require Kavana for both Parshias cannot fit in any way. And if you said that Kavana was limited to the first parak, to the first three psukim, to the first pasuk, you could say that that is a Kavana of the Milim. And the rest of the machlokas of whether mitzvah srichos Kavana is for the rest of Kriyashma. But once you have the opinion that both parshios require Kavana, I don't know what one is going to say. I don't know the answer. That's a very good question.
Something that's a question that I didn't even intend. So, but that is a good question.
It just doesn't hang together. It's just I could say to you, but I think it's ridiculous that the Mishnah or the Gemara at the beginning is talking about Kavana to fill mitzvahs kriyashma, and the Tanaim are all discussing a totally separate kind of Kavana. In other words, it could be that you have to have in mind to be mekabo malchus shamayim shma yisrael shem Hashem echad, but you don't. But let's say I'm not also having in mind to fulfill the mitzvah kriyashma, which for the Rambam, by the way, I realized first is impossible. Because the Rambam, there's only one mitzvah. The Rambam, if you look very clearly in the opening to Hilchos Kriyashma, and in the first halacha, is that it's mitzvah likros kriyashma pamayim bayom, period. I'd have to check for sure in the Sefer Mitzvahs, but this would have been the place where he would have said mitzvah l'kabel amachos shamayim. I think he sees them as one and the same mitzvah. So it's not like you can even, it's hard to imagine being l'kabel amachos shamayim, having intent for that, but I'm not Yotzei Kriyashma. I don't have Kavana Latzeis Kriyashma. That is Kriyashma.
Right.
I don't know how to put this together, honestly.
But the Rishonim's question is, why can't the Mishnah be talking about just the first pasuk?
Yes. Why didn't the Gemara just say, if you're going to distinguish between, why not just say that the first pasuk is the Mishnah's talking about Kivein Libo for the first pasuk Hamach Shemayim, and the rest of, because that's unique, and the rest of Kriyashma doesn't require Kavana.
How does that wouldn't answer the that's still a raya that mitzvah srichos kavana. I mean the Gemara.
No. It would be that just Kriyashma and just the beginning of Kriyashma requires kavana.
Right, but how does that meaning the Gemara could have said that the mitzvah Shema is different? I mean, just because you say just the first pasuk is different, why? Meaning, if you're invoking that this is a unique circumstance, whether it's unique to the first pasuk or unique to the whole mitzvah, still you could say it's unique.
Yes, but what I think what the Gemara really sounds like, if you wanted to read, well, let me put it this way. If you wanted to read that way, what the Gemara would be saying is that mitzvahs kriyashma doesn't require kavana. Mitzvahs kabbalas amal hashamayim requires kavana. And when the Mishnah was talking about him, with regards to any other kavana, you know, whether you need kavana, let's say kriyashma, so that could have, the Gemara could have said that the Mishnah is not addressing that question at all. Instead, it felt compelled to say, okay, no, it blends the two together. In other words, what you're really highlighting here is, which I don't like to say, and Rabbi Lichtenstein is not going to be happy about this, and the Rav Zal would not be happy either, and it wouldn't be Sissas Medovas Bekever, is this neat lumdash chiluk, distinction between kavana of Kabbal Shamayim and kavana just to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Kriya are two separate things. And the Gemara seems to be, the two seem to bleed one into the other. It doesn't seem to be such a clear-cut distinction. In other words, probably the simplest way to read the Gemara is the Gemara's open, these Tanaim all hold mitzvahs trichas kavana. But the opening part of the Gemara was working for the possibility that there's another shita. There's no good solution also, because I'm going to turn around and say, and I'm sorry for doing this to you, but if this is really if all these Tanaim hold mitzvahs trichas kavana, why didn't the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah bother to quote all these Tanaim, right? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah quoted just the first, our opening part, exactly our Mishnah, and my lav and kibain, latzeis lo kibain likros, just the opening part. And it didn't bother to cite any of these Tanaim, which would suggest that there's a separate issue of kavanas halev versus kavana, you know, likros kriyashma. Now, as I think I might know what the answer is now. Why didn't the Rashba might say something, but I'm not going to look it up now. I read it. I don't remember how he dealt with this question. But I'll tell you why the Gemara didn't say that. Because the way, and again, I may be pushing this, but it says, Hayakore batore begiyas man hamikra, mkive libo yotza. So you could say that we're talking about, you know, zman hamikra, and he's Kore Batorah. So the Mishnah is talking about the mitzvah Kriyashma, not about the mitzvah Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim. And that's why the Gemara didn't want to say, in other words, even if you were to say, in other words, if the Mishnah says in Kivein Libo, presumably it means not just for Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim, but for all of the Kriya as well. Because it's Haya Kore Bator V'Giyas Man HaMikra. So yes, the Gemara might say in the end, of course Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim requires Kavana. But that wouldn't solve the problem of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is still going to have this idea of Kriya in Kivein Libo Lotzes. And therefore, the Gemara has to say that Kavana was Kavana Likros, but we're still left with the fact that separately, independent of maybe Mitzvah's Entrichas Kavana, and regular Kriyashma doesn't require, but it's inconceivable that Kabbalah's Amach Shemayim doesn't. And the question is, which part of Kriyashma requires Kavana to understanding what you're saying, what the meaning is? I'm still going to be left with that little question is, what about the guy who says both parshios? What about the one who says both parshios? Because if you say both parshios require kavanas, you know, perush hamilim, understanding what you're saying, that's also kavana likros, I think. So, okay. So now we get to the final opinion, which is the one the Rambam is going to paskin like, Tana Rabbanan. First, the medium with line in the Gemara, the last words. Tana Rabbanan. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Ad kan sricha kavanas halev. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says Kavanas Halev is only required for the first pasuk. For the first pasuk. If I were to go back to my drush earlier, why doesn't if the first two pasukim, to quote Rambam and Tosfos, are Yichor Hashem and Vahavaso and Yiraso Avadaso, why does Rabbi Meir not require the second pasuk? I presume the answer is that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is enough, because once you accept God's rule, so everything else that comes along with it, it follows naturally. Even the idea that there are things that one gives up one's life for God rather than violating a particular aver, no matter how harsh that may seem. If one were to draw a parallel for Rabbi Meir, it would be the Ramban's explanation for the Halachos Gedolos. The Halachos Gedolos doesn't count Anochi Hashem Elokecha as a mitzvah. The Rambam does. The Rambam counts it in the Minyan HaMitzvos, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So why does the Bahag not count? Why does Halachos Gedolos, who was, I think, the first one to count 613 mitzvahs, why does he not count it? So the Ramban suggests because if you don't have Anochi Hashem Elokecha, if you don't accept God, none of the other mitzvahs mean anything. In other words, first you have to accept God's kingship, God's rule, God's being the ruler. That's not a mitzvah. That's sort of the sine qua non for all mitzvahs. That's the foundation of the system. Once you accept God's authority, now we can give you the list of things that you have to do. So Rabbi Meir might say that you don't need v'haftas Hashem Elokecha. It's sufficient to have Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Once you accept O Malchus Shamayim, everything else follows from that. Omar Rava, Halacha k'Rabbi Meir. Rava says, we paskel k'Rabbi Meir. That's it. And Tosfos says, Tosfos, the second Tosfos, in six or seven words, Tosfos says, and that's the way we paskel. We paskel like Rava, who's the last authority named here. We generally follow the latter-day authorities, the end, which is why the Rambam says, if you have kavana for the first pasuk, that is sufficient. It's based upon Rabbi Meir.
So that's why we don't hold from Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana.
Correct.
Rabbi Akiva.
Correct. We don't paskel like Rabbi Akiva. We don't paskel like Rabbi Eliezer. We don't paskel like Rabbi Achomishu Rabbi Yehuda. We don't paskel like his Tanakama. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yoshia, like Rabbi Zutra. We paskin that Kavanas Halev is sufficient if you have it for the first apostle. Okay.
Rabbi, this is probably what you were just saying, but just so I have it clear in my head. Maybe Kavana Likros and Kavana Ol Malchut Shammai, maybe that's the same thing. Because in other words, Kavana Likros means you have a Kavana to understand what you're reading, which is what the words say. It's Ol Malchut Shammai. But mitzvah shichas kavana is talking about the kavana of doing it l'shem mitzvah, which you were saying before is hard to understand, to distinguish what that means. You go malchus shemayim. How could you be doing that not l'shem mitzvah? But maybe that's what it means to do it. You're reading Shema, you understand it, but you have to be doing it. Mitzvah shichas kavana means I'm accepting malchus shemayim because Hashem told me that I need to do that at a specific time.
So if you're willing to buy into such a distinction, I hear what you're saying. I find it hard to believe, but I can see technically, right? You can walk around all day thinking about God and being mekabel his Ol Malchus Shamayim and not have the intention for the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. I guess that's possible. And if you say that, then all the problems disappear. Right? All the problems disappear. The first part was really just about kavana for the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, and everything else is the mitzvah about kavana saleh for the parish Aminim and what it means. It would solve all the problems, but I'm not. I find it kind of hard to split that. Okay, Tanya Sumchus Omer Kol Hamarich BeEchad. Anyone who stretches out the word Echad, Marichin Lo Yamav Ushnosav. His years and his days are lengthened. He has Arichos Yamav Ushanim. Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Yaakov Uvedalit. It's the Dalit that you have to extend. Now I have some bad news for everybody here. Unless there is a Temani who happens to be in Shir. This Gemara is impossible unless you are a Temani. It is impossible to be Marech Bedalit. I won't ask it. I'll do it. I know I'm not. If anybody wants to join, they can. But if you say Ahad, that's not being Marech Bedalit. You haven't said the Dalit until you Ahad, until you finish the Dalit. It's impossible to do so. Now, the way you can be Marech Bedalit is if you're a Temani, and you pronounce a dalet without a dagesh as a the. So you can say echad. That you can be marach bedalet, but not the hard D that we have, which tells you that in the time of Chazal, at least this particular Amora, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, and there's no reason necessarily to assume that he was the only one, although maybe not everyone pronounced it that way, that he pronounced the Dalet something like a Taimani pronounces the Dalet now. He pronounced that vowel, the sound, the voice TH, not a D, the way we read it. So there really is no way to be Marech B'Dalet. Only certain consonants allow themselves to be lengthened. I never sat down to figure out which consonants work, which don't. Nonetheless, when Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov says B'Dalet, it tells you how that letter was once upon a time pronounced. In fact, the Gemara later in the Perek, I noticed the Rambam says this, but I think only some Syrians will you hear this. I think the Gemara says, if not, it's the Rambam, that you have to be, the Gemara says, you have to be mafrid ben hadvekim when you read Kriyat Shema. To be mafrid ben hadvekim, to separate between those things that would stick together, means that when you have a letter, a word that ends with a letter, and the next word starts with a letter, you're not supposed to run them together. You're not supposed to say al levavecha, because I just said one lamed. You're supposed to say al levavecha. It's true for Balei Kriya as well. Are supposed to be careful not to run two words together which end and start with the same letter, because then you only get the letter once. So among the examples that are listed are Hakanaf Pesil and Esev Besadacha. Now, if you are a contemporary Ashkenazi, or I think even most Sfardim, Esev Besadacha cannot run together, and neither can Hakanaf Pesil run together. But rather, you'd only run together if you pronounce both the fe and the pe and the vase and the base is the same. And I think some Syrians, I don't know if they always do it this way, when they do it in Kriyashma, they say Eseb Bisadacha, and they say Hakanaf Petil. Now, just from a quick tangent, the side point about history of language, the forms, the Beged Kefes forms, Beis Veis, we don't do Gimel and Dalet, Temanim do, Kaf, Chaf, Pefe, and Taf, Saf, Ashkenazim, those forms were not always distinguished. And this is not my observation. This observation I heard, at least in the name of Dr. Richie Steiner, who taught many, many years in Revel, and he's really one of the foremost experts in the world in Hebrew, that once upon a time, those consonants were not distinguished. And the sounds in certain cases may actually have been used in other contexts. Two that come to mind is that Hebrew actually has two cheses and two ayins. We have not distinguished in pronunciation between the cheses and the ayins in a very, very long time. They have merged into one. Certainly in Hebrew, they've always been written as one, although in Arabic, there are two ayins and cheses. In what a language known as Ugaritic, which is really a Canaanite dialect that was only rediscovered by archaeologists in the late 20s, early 30s, Ugaritic has two cheses and two ayins. In Hebrew, they merge into one. If you think that this is just imaginary, think about that godforsaken strip of land on the west coast of Israel that nobody seems to want. And what is the name of that strip?
Gaza.
Gaza. But what is the name in Hebrew?
Gaza.
Except for if you listen to an Arab pronounce it, you'll hear the other ayin. Gaza. It sounds a little closer to a G. It's another guttural. And the suggestion was made, not mine, this is what I heard, I don't know if it's his, b'shem Dr. Steiner, is that only after the two ayins in pronunciation merged into one, then that G sound was available, this kind of a soft G, available for the other form of the gimel. Similarly, the two cheses, we don't pronounce, even as hard as the ch sound is for non-Jewish speakers, people who haven't been trained hearing the language to pronounce, that's not even the real ches. The real ches is that you might hear some Sfardim pronounce it that way, a real guttural. But there actually have been two cheses. One was pronounced like a guttural, and one was the ch sound. Only when the cheses lost the distinction, the ch sound was now available for the chaf without the dot in it. That's how it developed in language. And the other famous example is Sodom and Gomorrah. That you'll actually hear in pronunciation. Where why do we call it Gemara? It's Amora. The answer is it's the other ayin. And it shouldn't surprise you, by the way, you have two letters written the same way, but pronounced differently. That's what's called an oral reading tradition. We have it too. The shin and the sin, remember, are written the same way. And most of us look at a text without dots. which is the way it was written for almost forever until the last 1,000 years, and even so. And we know, we figure out whether it's a shin or a sin, even though they're written identically, two different letters. So it shouldn't surprise you that other letters could have that as well. The reason why it matters very much for the Bali Dik, for people who study language, is that you may look at two Hebrew roots that have a ches, that they look identical, they either have an ayin, they have a ches, and they're actually two unrelated roots because they stem from originally two completely different cheses or two different ayins, and they're unrelated to one another. And the last thing I'll say on that is, if you're particularly interested, the Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, in his Shelos Utshuvos, his last volume is not Shelos Utshuvos. It's the volume that when somebody pirated his stuff in Israel, they didn't reprint it because it's all the Kfira, in quotes. It's his essays on Mechkar, what we would call academic Talmud. And one of the, not, I don't think if it's the opening essay, it might be the opening essay, he talks about the root Peresh Ayin in Tanakh, and there actually being as two Peresh Ayins. And he's talking about in the context of hair covering, Ufaras Vashaisha, but he's starting with the premise, in fact, that we may be looking at two different roots. So the root Peresh Ayin may mean very unrelated things in different contexts. But this is true with Ayins, and it's true with Cheses as well. Okay. Anyway, sorry if I bored you with that little excursus on language.
No way to tell the difference? The Ayins are written...
There's no way to tell the difference. The only way to figure out is if the root has a cognate, has the same root either in Arabic or less likely, but you might in Ugaritic, then you can figure out that it's two different ones. I'll just say also, by the way, there are other consonants in Hebrew that also have merged, but those are sometimes easier to tell. In Arabic, I think, but I know for sure in Ugaritic, you have a Dalid, you have a Zion, and then you have what's called a Vowel. It's an in-between sound, but you know when you look in Hebrew, a Dalid in Ugaritic or in Arabic is going to be a Dalid in Hebrew and Aramaic. A Zion in Arabic and Ugaritic is going to be a Zion in Hebrew and Aramaic. But if it's a Vowel, it's going to come into Hebrew as a Zion, but into Aramaic as a Dalid. For example, the word Zahav, which in Aramaic is Dahava, tells you that it's the third consonant. Same thing is true, by the way, with the Shin and Tuf. When you get a Hebrew word, which is shin, and the Aramaic is a tuf, it came from a third consonant in Proto-Semitic. So, but with ches and ayin, there's no way to tell. With dalid and zayin, with dalid and tuf, you can tell by looking at Aramaic and Hebrew, you can often tell. With ayin and ches, you're not going to be able to tell from Aramaic or Hebrew. You're going to have to go to a language that still preserved the distinction between the two consonants. Okay. Anyway, now... just to finish this part, so Amravashi Uvavacha Leyachtov Bechet. Even though you're going to lengthen the Dalet, you have to make sure not to swallow the Ches in the process because you're rushing to lengthen the Dalet, so you have to make sure you get the Ches out properly. And then Rav Yirmiyah Hava Yosef, Kame de Rav Chia, it should be the Rabbi Zeira. And there are different texts here, and the Yushalmi has Rabbi Zeira, and the manuscripts have Rabbi Zeira. Chazye, he saw, Rav Zeira saw that Rav Yirmiyah was sitting to have a marich tuva. He was really going on in the Dalit. Amar Lei said to him, enough. Kevan da amlichte lemala ulemata lo arba ruchas hashamayim tu lo tzrichas. Once you had in mind to have God reign in the heavens and the earth and all four directions as he's the king of everything, that's sufficient. There is a very interesting machlokas here, a machlokas of Rishonim. When one is being marich and thinking about God as being above, below, and all, being the ruler of all, above, below, in all directions, whether one is supposed to move one's eyes in that direction. And some of the Rishonim say that later we're going to see a story when Rebbe wanted to chapa Kriya Shema quickly in the middle of his shir. He hadn't said Kriya Shema, so he would just run his hand over his eyes slowly, and then he would say Kriya Shema at that time. So some want to say he covered his eyes so that he could be looking and people wouldn't see where his eyes were moving. I don't think the practice is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but it's really a debate amongst the Rishonim here whether when one has in mind to be Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu above, below, in all four directions, whether one is supposed to move one's eyes in those directions or not. Okay, but it's not, I don't think that's our practice. We assume we cover our eyes so as to not be distracted by what's going on around us. All right, any questions? Rabbi Lichtenstein.
Yes, can you give the source again for that Rambam on not putting all kinds of signs inside the tefillin. I think you said Perek Gimel.
On the screen now, Perek Hey of Hilchos Tefillin Mitzvah Sefer Torah, Halacha Dalet. Hey Dalet.
Perek Hey, Halacha Dalet. I'm just wondering, you know, a lot of people here are too young to remember this, but 25 years ago, 30 years ago, terrorists attacked a girl's school in Ma'alot. They came down from Lebanon and killed 19 young women students. And it was a terrible tragedy for the whole Jewish world. And some rabbi a few days later went in to the school and examined all the mezuzot and found that they were all psulim. And I got up in shul the next Shabbos and I said, if that's why 19 young women students were murdered, then we need a different God. What I was trying to say is that's not the purpose of a mezuzah. The purpose of a mezuzah is to know that God exists, and when we're going in and going out and so on, and not to guard us. There is in Jewish lore, so I'll let you talk a little bit about it, but is that what the Rambam, I wonder if that's not what the Rambam is actually saying. Because the Rambam was against all these kinds of spooky things.
So I agree with your sentiment, and it may even be what the Rambam is driving at. And I think that even if you adopted the other position, the statement was offensive. However, there certainly is a strain of thought within the Gemara. It appears in the Halacha in one context. And even the ancient word, although ironically more for the tefillin than for the mezuzah, suggest a function of protection. The term for tefillin in English is phylacteries, which comes from the Greek word phulaxo, which means to watch or to guard or to protect. So you could read it in a sermonic way. It protects you from sin because you remember God's presence. But I don't think that's how it was taken. There is the Gemara, and I think it's in Bava Metzia, speaks about the prohibition when you leave, if you are selling a house, or leaving a rented apartment, and you know another Jew is coming in after you, you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs. And the Gemara suggests it's a sakana. So there isn't, and we've shown them there. If you look, I can find you the Gemara Bava Metzia, do talk about that element of mezuzah as being a protection. I do agree that it's offensive to think that you can know why God does anything. And yes, I would like to believe that God has better things to be doing than deciding to let, 19 young people die because the mezuzahs weren't that way. But I think the offensive part is not the idea that mezuzahs have a protective effect, which is not, again, I'm not sure. I love that idea. I think it reflects a popular notion. I think the Rambam probably didn't like that, but it is in the Gemara. But there's a very big leap between that and saying, well, I know why God did things. And this is why it happened. That I think is theologically offensive. But the idea that there is a protective effect, as much as it's not Maimonidean Judaism, that strain of thought certainly does exist.
But there's a certain amount of superstition in Jewish thought.
Yes, but it's easier to dismiss that if it's maybe an Agada somewhere, if it's found in some late Medrash. But when the Gemara really codifies as a halacha, so there is, again, unless you want to argue that it's codified as that Chazal paskin that way, because since people then perceived it that way, it was inappropriate. You could construct a rationalist argument as to why the Gemara doesn't sound like it means, what it says. As I would say, if Shmuel Bar Chafnigon could explain away the story with Shaul and the sorceress as not being real, you can explain away almost anything. So you could explain that way. I often quote this Rambam because it's the way I think. But I do have to acknowledge at least that the other strain does exist. Again, it doesn't justify pretending to know why God does things in the world, But the idea of a protective effect of the mezuzah has real roots in Chazal. So I still agree with your point, but I think in the interest of intellectual honesty, as much as I love this Rambam, it has to be at least acknowledged that the other way of thinking about a mezuzah, and they don't have to, they can coexist. They don't have to be in contradiction with one another necessarily, is possible. And even for the Rambam might have said, it's one thing if you think your mezuzah is protective, but to destroy the mitzvah, to be posel the mezuzah, that's almost unthinkable. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So thank you, Rabbi.
Shema,
good.
When you say Shema, if you have Kavana, that the meaning of the words is like in Parshat Vayechi, the sons of Yaakov, talking to Yaakov, is that in line with Kabbat Ol Machut Shamayim for us?
I mean, to some extent, yes, because Yaakov's children were saying, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. They were saying, we have no other gods. We have no intention to go astray. We are loyal to God. So if you take it in the literal sense, the essence of the Kabbalah Samach Shemayim is not the Shema Yisrael part, which is the clever takeoff of the Medrash, right? Yisrael not as in the Jewish people, but Yisrael as Yaakov Avinu.
No,
Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is the essence of Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. And that's what that's what Yaakov's sons were doing, right? He said, maybe I'll have an Esau, I'll have a Yishmael. And they said, no. For all of us, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. So I think it would still come out to be the same thing.
Hey, Weider.
Yes.
Other than in this week's Hashem Yimloch, Olam Va'ed, where else is Hashem called Melech directly in the Chumash?
There's only one, which is why, though there are only two others. One is Vayhi Bishur and Melech, which again, that's Machlokas who it is. And the other one is...
in our parasha, Hashem Yimloch Olam Va'ed.
One sec, hold on. Hashem Yimloch, there is the Vayhi Bishur and Melech, and then it's Usra'as Melech Bo in the Brachos of Bilam. Those are the only three, and the last two are not absolutely compelling. Those are the only three possible references to God as Melech and Chumash. The reason I know that is not because I'm such a bucky, but because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in the last parak, when it's looking to find a fourth pasuk of Malchios from Torah, is unable to find one except for it to say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that it's Kabbalah from Malchus Shemayim.
But I'm coming.
Isn't there. So those are the only three, and only one.
The Chasam HaSefer, Iker Chasam HaSefer in Shema. You don't have the word Melech.
What?
But Chazal still thought it was obvious.
What?
But I know that the only explicit
expression. Isn't it more like Atah HaReisol Adas Ki Atah Hashem Eino Milvado? Isn't it more to say that there are just no other gods, that God's unique, not necessarily about a Melech, but more about God, more than a Melech?
Well, yes, but again, I'm not gonna, you know, I will. Of course, God is above a king. But I think that part of it may be is that the way we relate to things is in terms that we can relate to. We can relate to Melech Basar Adam, and by extension, we relate to, you know, Melech Malchei Hamlochim. But you know, it is what it is. That's how Chazal take it.
Rabbi, a quick kitchen question, if I could ask.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording. You can ask.